to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley, and today we are going to be talking about the Ouija board. The Ouija board has been very popular in the United States over a century. Some of the information I'll be sharing today is coming from historian Robert Murch, and he has spent years studying the Ouija board. He explains how the Civil War and actually Sears' catalog fueled the phenomena. And this is shared by Bernard Woods. So basically, when you're dealing with the Ouija board, you are connecting the living and the dead. And a lot of people bought the Ouija board in the early 1900s, late 1800s, for the main fact that they wanted to connect with their loved ones. Spiritualism really spiked in the United States right after the Civil War, with over 750,000 dead from the Civil War. Psychics and mediums were at an all-time high, trying to connect the dead with the living. And if you deal with ghosts and spirits as a paranormal investigator or even on your own, you'll find that most of these spirits come from a sudden or untimely death, as would be the Civil War. If the soldier is dying on the battlefield, keep in mind over thousands of soldiers lay dead on the battlefield in unmarked graves. They put these bodies in shallow graves just to stop the widespread of disease and the stench in the air. And it was years later that they went back on some of these battlefields to try to determine the Confederate from the Union soldiers and place them in a marked grave, at least with a headstone. And so all these soldiers, all these people that died, some of these soldiers were grasping the grass that they laid on. They died in that spot. Who knows what they were thinking and what was going in their head and trying to say what they wanted to say to their loved one before they gave their last breath. And so a lot of ways these Ouija boards connected these dead soldiers with their loved ones. And these loved ones were crying out for some type of message from their son or dad that they never got to say goodbye to. I personally believe that the Ouija board was just an extension of what already existed. The name Ouija was coined by Helen Peters, who was using the board with her brother-in-law, Elijah Bond, one night in 1890 in Baltimore. When she asked the board, what should they call it? And the board spelled out Ouija, O-U-I-J-A. A lot of people say Ouija, some say Ouija. I always called it Ouija, so I'm going to go with Ouija the rest of the show. And it came with a planchette, and that was the little teardrop device with the little hole in the middle through the glass center that spelled out the words, the letters, and then would answer the question, whatever you asked it. Helen Peters got the first patent on the Ouija board, but the business was soon taken over by American entrepreneur William Fuld, who began to market the board, especially in national catalogs like Sears Roebuck. Ouija was the magic game. Remarkable, interesting, mystifying. A great mirth and making game for parties. Apparently answers questions concerning past, present, and future, reads one ad in the Sears catalog. Now, as the board's popularity and profit margins increased, most of the early investors sought to highlight their role in the creation of the Ouija board. But Helen Peters wanted nothing more to do with it after the board caused serious damage to her family. Some Civil War family heirlooms went missing from Helen Peters' home. Peters asked the Ouija board who had taken them. According to Helen Peters' grandson, the board indicated a member of the family. Half the family believed it, and half the family said bullshit. The event created a conflict that would never be resolved and actually tore the family apart. Now, William Fulb, who took over the Ouija board, had his own Ouija-related family troubles. In 1919, he cut his brother-in-law out of his business, and the two never spoke again. That year was a particularly good one for sales following a world war and a flu epidemic. In 1920 article, the New York Times said, they compared the Ouija board's popularity to that of bubblegum. And in 1927, the Baltimore Sun reported that Fulb had personally made $1 million from the sales of the board. He continued to open new factories, building the largest three-story building in Baltimore after the Ouija board itself told him to prepare for a big business. In early 1927, he went up on the roof of the building to supervise replacement of a flagpole. Now, according to the Baltimore Sun, he was standing near the edge of the roof, holding on to the iron support of the pole to steady himself. And the pole support pulled away, and he toppled backwards off the roof. He grabbed hold of the side of a window opening, which suddenly closed, sending him crashing down to the sidewalk below. He broke several ribs, but was expected to survive, until a bump on the road taken him to the hospital, and then that fractured bone went through his heart, and he died. Now, his family continued to run the business until 1966, when they sold it to Parker Brothers, which was later bought by the Hasbro Company, and their website warns, "Handle the Ouija board with respect, and it won't disappoint you." So there was a dark side of the Ouija board also, which was included in the movie The Exorcist, plus many other films. And I know personally, I had the board myself by Parker Brothers, and I myself got rid of the board. In the late 90s, I decided to make a documentary on paranormal and ghosts and spirits. And after speaking with the priest, somewhere along in that conversation, he brought up the Ouija board and said, if you ever come across a Ouija board or a story that involved the Ouija board, to get rid of the Ouija board. He was dead serious. I could, in the look in his eyes, I will never forget, that the Ouija board is linked to darkness. But I did want to give a history where the Ouija board started, and even though Helen Peters got the copyright for the board, the planchette was used in numerous games before the Ouija board. That involved putting a pencil in the middle to where the eye is on the planchette. So the upside-down pencil placed in that planchette would actually write on the paper the answer to the question you were asking. And that seemed to not work. So they went to the eye that actually you look down through and wrote down the letters on a piece of paper spelling out your answer. So that was going on in France way before it hit Baltimore. So when you think about people stealing other people's ideas or working off that idea and creating a board, even there was even a board out that was before the Ouija board, and everything was almost identical to it, but never got the patent. But that's in another story by itself. That goes on every day, people stealing other people's ideas. So I really don't think the Ouija board is not Helen Peters' invention. But they got the patent, and their family made the money off her idea of taking it to the National Patent Office. But when they started advertising this in 1891 in papers, and they would advertise it as the Ouija, the Wonderful Talking Board, a Pittsburgh toy novelty shop labeled it in 1891 as the Wonderful Talking Board. You know, they described it as a magical device that answers questions about the past, the present, and the future. Another advertisement says it was interesting and mysterious. The mystery of the talking board was basically what sold the board even today. Basically, the board is a flat board with the letters of the alphabet arrayed in two semicircles above the numbers 0 through 9. The words yes and no in the uppermost corners, and goodbye at the bottom, accompanied by a planchette, a teardrop-shaped device, usually with a small window in the body, used to maneuver about the board. The idea of two or more people would sit around the board, place their hands, their fingertips, on the planchette. They would pose a question and watch as the planchette moved from letter to number, spelling out the answers, seemingly of its own accord. The biggest difference is in the materials. The board is now usually cardboard rather than wood, and the planchette is plastic. But you know, thinking back on the late 1800s, it was common, because of spiritualism, to link the dead with the living, and it wasn't seen as bizarre or weird. It's hard to imagine that now we look at it as that, and we think, why are you opening the gates of hell? The main selling point of that board in the late 1800s and early 1900s was connecting the dead mainly, and I think it thrived off the Civil War, because all the dead, all the sudden deaths, untimely deaths, and people reaching out to psychics and mediums to connect them with the family. But you know, the company wasn't looking at it as opening the gates of hell. What the company was looking at was the Americans' wallets. You know, it was a huge, huge seller. So sure, it was a family game that spelled out your answers on a board. So you're probably asking yourself, how did Helen Peters get a patent on the Ouija board when so many others could not? So when they went to the patent office, they basically had to prove how their product worked. And this being a board game, how does it work? How do you play it? So the chief patent officer demanded a demonstration. If the board could correctly spell out his name, which was supposed to be unknown to Helen Peters, he'd allow the patent to proceed. They all sat down around the board, and the planchette faithfully spelled out the patent officer's name. Whether or not it was mystical spirits, or the fact that, or Helen being a patent attorney, may have just known the man's name, that's unclear. But on March 10th, 1891, a white-faced, visibly shaken patent officer awarded Helen a patent for her new toy or game. The first patent offers no explanation as how the device works, just asserts that it does. But 120 years later, the success of this board taps into a weird place in American culture. It is marketed as both mystical and also entertaining, fun with the element of otherworldly excitement. I like that. To me, very dangerous. You're dealing with the dead on a board. You're calling out the dead. Nonetheless, the board is very, very popular. So popular that in 5 months in 1944, a New York department store sold 50,000 of them. In 1967, Parker Brothers bought the game from the Fold Company. 2 million boards were sold, outselling Monopoly. As I mentioned earlier in the movie The Exorcist, it scared the pants off people in theaters with that pea soup and head spinning. Based on a true story, the 12-year-old was possessed by a demon after playing with the Ouija board by herself, changed how people saw the board. But I can assure you, in late 1960s, when I was at a friend's house playing with the Ouija board, my friend's mother walked into the room thinking we were both pushing the planchette around the board, just answering our own questions and trying to scare the other one, which she was generally right. I did cheat and push it, and a couple answers I thought. I didn't know if he did or not, but I know I did. So yeah, I cheated on the board, and I think his mother caught on to me. So when she came into the room, she asked her son, "What is my great-grandfather's name?" And she knew that her son didn't know that. It took a while, but then the board spelled out Roberto. She immediately picked up the board and threw it into a garbage can. And that was the end of that. Another instance was, a friend was telling me him and his sister were playing with the board, and they both took their hands off the planchette, and it moved by itself. It just moved one spot, but it moved by itself. They too ran out of the room and got rid of the board. I had my board a few years, and my family always played with it. But after talking to the priest in our church, who basically begged me to get rid of the Ouija board, I did just that. Whether it holds some type of demonic powers or is it dealing with the dead? I really don't know, but it is a mysterious game. And how many of you out there pushed that planchette on your own? Honest question. Or do you think the partner you're playing with pushed it on their own? Or do you think it moved itself? It's interesting that most of these people that bought into the game, into the corporate side of it, believed in its authenticity. Now, yeah, they went on camera and newspapers and saying how great it was because, yeah, they're going to make money off of it. By reading some of these articles of the people that knew the family members, like Helen Peters, they truly believed in the game. What are your thoughts? You can leave me your thoughts at coolie54@gmail.com, and I look forward to reading your thoughts on this. I'm your host, Al Cooley.
Podcast Network.